In Louisiana, a jury has returned a verdict in the Trader Joe's killing in Baton Rouge. In Oklahoma, four suspects are arrested in the case of two missing mothers that we brought you on Friday. And an 85-year-old woman shoots and kills an intruder. These stories and more are coming at you today, Wednesday, April 17th, on Real Life Real Crime Daily. And I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
And I'm Mike Agavino. Hey, guys.
What's up, what's up?
Humpy hump day.
Boy, it is. Hey.
My God, can you believe how much has happened since we last got together?
Yep.
A lot.
Guaranteed news. Crime's always going to happen, huh?
Well, I told you Scheffler would win the Masters.
That's true. You did. I lost money on that, too.
I lost money, too, because I didn't bet on him because I don't like odds that aren't good. Right. So I bet on a bunch of different, I spread the money all around and took some hits. If you had Israel to get attacked by Iran, you would have won that bet. God, that was, crazy and, dominating the news cycle as well as, the start of this little trial in New York City on Monday. Yep. God, wouldn't you like to be in there for that voir dire, though? That's got to be an all-time. This thing should be on freaking TV. I mean, come on.
Some states allow TVs in, most don't. Louisiana doesn't.
Yeah.
Is it up to the judge in New York?
Some states, it's not up to the judge. I can't speak for New York because I'm not sure. But Louisiana, you just can't have it, period.
I think they could do it there. I have to check this. I think they could do it, and they chose not to.
Well, I'm hoping
but Trump apparently fell asleep day one.
The head of Blue Lives Matters from New York City is supposed to be coming in this week if everything goes according to plan, and I'll ask him. I get him on Real Life, Real Crime.
Maybe we can sneak him in there with a camera.
Yeah. But he'll know about New York City.
Well, so. Lots and lots and lots going on. So,
well, let's get down to it then. Some true crime time for Wednesday.
Well, we're going to bring you to Baton Rouge first. And an East Baton Rouge Parish jury has found Jace Boyd guilty of manslaughter in the 2020 shooting death of an unarmed panhandler in the parking lot of Trader Joe's in Baton Rouge. The manslaughter charge is less than the second-degree murder conviction prosecutors had hoped for. Manslaughter carries a sentence of 0 to 40 years in prison, while second-degree murder would have come with an automatic life sentence. And Boyd will be sentenced at a later date. Closing arguments in that trial were held last Thursday morning. And Assistant District Attorney Tiara Jones pointed at Boyd during closing arguments as she pounded the podium and declared, "This is murder." Boyd claims he was acting in self-defense when he shot 61-year-old Danny Buckley. Buckley later died at a hospital. Boyd was in his truck with his pregnant fiancée when he claims Buckley beat on the vehicle and pulled the door handle as he asked for money. Boyd said he told Buckley to leave, and Buckley then approached two women in the parking lot, also asking them for money. Boyd said he told Buckley to leave the women alone and claims Buckley then rushed towards him and mumbled words, "He believed I was going to kill you." Both of these women testified at trial they did not feel threatened by Buckley. "This case should make you nervous," Jones told the jury. "If it's okay for Jace Boyd to go in a parking lot and kill someone in broad daylight, then that should make you very nervous. You can't use self-defense to justify your illegal murderous actions." In his closing arguments, defense attorney Seth Dorner told the jury that the prosecution woefully failed in proving a second-degree murder charge. Jace Boyd did not go to the Trader Joe's parking lot to kill anybody, he told jurors. He told the jury Buckley was the aggressor and that Boyd was terrified and simply trying to protect himself and his fiance. During deliberations, juries returned to the courtroom for clarification on the difference between second-degree murder and manslaughter. Never a good sign if you're on the prosecution side. And the jury was unable to reach a unanimous verdict on a less serious charge that Boyd faced of illegal use of a weapon. Boyd did not take stand during this trial. This is really the main talk in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area, because this is a really gray line in a lot of people's minds.
What got them though was the two women testifying that they didn't feel threatened.
Yeah.
And the fact that he left his vehicle once this guy goes up to two women after he tried to get in his, if he'd have shot him trying to get in his vehicle, totally different story.
Yeah. Well, he claimed that, you know, and this is his claim, but you can clearly see him on surveillance footage pulling on the door handle to get it back in the vehicle, which is when he shot him. Pregnant fiance in the passenger seat, and he said he felt threatened. I don't know what the law would say is the requirement for using lethal force like that if you're a citizen.
Up to the jury.
Yeah.
So I always say I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
Well, exactly. And I think the prosecution with this gray area in this case, going for second degree murder and a life sentence might have been a little bit.
Yeah.
What was his background? Did he have any, had he been in trouble ever with the law?
Yeah, he was just in Trader Joe's with his pregnant girlfriend, and the guy came up and asked for money, you know, and he told him leave us alone, and was in his mind coming to the defense of these two other females, but like you said, they said we didn't feel threatened.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's going to be doing some prison time.
He will, but manslaughter is a lot better.
Yep.
Time to be doing for sure.
Yeah, the only difference is specific intent.
Yeah,
and so I don't know how they got around that, but interesting.
It's still pretty unfortunate. I mean, I don't have a hard time believing that he was purely acting in a defensive mode. Right,
and that's probably why they came with a manslaughter.
Yeah, they tried to find a 50-yard line there and a way to punish him, but.
Yeah, and with no, I mean, he had no record to my knowledge. So it's not like this guy was a big troublemaker that you would expect this kind of reaction out of.
So they have a lot of leeway in the sentencing guidelines. The judge maybe
40 years.
Yeah, the judge can. They could do a pre-sentence investigation report to look in his criminal history and has he ever had any this stuff before, blah, 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 whatever. And then the judge would give them whatever they're going to give them.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting case. Another interesting case that we are going to go visit again. I think we've probably visited this case 3 or 4 times in the past year, but I think important to go there again because it is wrapped up now. And I think this is going to become a landmark case. I hope it doesn't, but I think it's going to become a landmark case that is visited time and time again as a result of the verdicts and the sentencing. So we're going to Michigan again to talk about the Ethan Crumley school shooting. And we've, as I said, reported on the Oxford High School mass shooting numerous times. Most recently, we covered the separate and unprecedented trials of James, the father, and Jennifer Crumley, the mother of Ethan Crumley. He was 15 years old, Ethan was, at the time of the shootings. I say this case is unprecedented because this is the first time in history that parents of a shooter in a mass shooting were charged and convicted. Last Tuesday, both James and Jennifer were sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. Each were found guilty on 4 counts. There were 4 kids that died that day of involuntary manslaughter. The victims' families were all in attendance for the sentencing hearing. James, who's 47, and Jennifer, who's 46, were sentenced one after another by a circuit court judge named Cheryl Matthews. Ethan is now 17, but he had been previously pled guilty and was already sentenced to life in prison. Matthews' sentencing decision was in line with the Oakland County prosecutor's request. And after both parents were found guilty on the 4 counts, one for each of the students that their son had killed. The Judge Matthews told the Crumleys that the jury convictions were, quote, not about poor parenting,
but about how they repeatedly ignored warnings that a reasonable person, it's a quote, reasonable person would have seen. Quote, these convictions confirm repeated acts that could have halted an oncoming runaway train, she said. Before she was sentenced, Jennifer Crumley told the court that she felt, quote, deep remorse, regret, and grief about the shooting. But she also deflected some of the blame onto school officials and took offense to prosecution's portrayal of her as a neglectful mother. Quote, we were good parents. We were the average family. We weren't perfect, but we loved our son and we loved each other tremendously. James Crumley also addressed the court, explaining to the judge that he did not know beforehand about his son's planned attack on the school and telling the victims' families directly that he would have acted differently on that day of the shooting had he known anything about the plan. Quote, please note that I am truly sorry for your loss as a result of what my son did. I cannot express how much I wish I had known what was going on with him and what was going to happen. So in both parents' cases, prosecutors wrote that their, quote, gross negligence changed an entire community forever. They both could have prevented the shooting with, quote, tragically simple actions, prosecutors wrote, adding that they, quote, failed to take any action when presented with the gravest of dangers. In a pre-sentencing report, Jennifer said that she has the hindsight now to know she would have handled things differently. With the information I have now, of course, my answer would be hugely different, she said. There are so many things that I would change if I could go back in time. Both of the trials focused on the day of the shooting. The day after Thanksgiving and just 4 days before the shootings, James Crumley bought Ethan a handgun, while Jennifer took him to a gun range over that weekend. On Tuesday, the next week, a teacher said she had found a note on Ethan's desk with a drawing of a gun and a person who had been shot, along with messages, including one that said, "The thoughts won't stop. Help me." That discovery prompted the school to summon the parents for a meeting, but school officials testified that the Crumleys declined to bring Ethan home. And this is really, really the key moment. This is the day of the shooting. They get called in. They have this meeting. They're shown this picture. And they decline to bring Ethan home after that meeting because they both had to go back to work. So Ethan went on to commit the murders later that afternoon. It's assumed that both James and Jennifer are going to appeal these verdicts. So you never know what happens in an appeal. But guys, I've thought about this case long and hard. And despite the fact that I believe these parents should be punished, they were neglectful. They missed obvious signs that their son was a danger to others. They purchased him a gun in the face of all those warning signs. They were too consumed with their own work responsibilities to take Ethan home and discuss his drawings the day of the shootings. Condemn them in the strongest possible way for all of these things. But the problem I keep coming back to is I don't trust the government and I don't trust the courts to define and draw a fine line here around this case and close it off as an outlier. On the contrary, I'm far more confident that this case and these verdicts will become a Pandora's box and the slippery slope will be activated so that we're looking at parents being held legally responsible for all kinds of criminal actions on the part of their children moving forward. I can practically guarantee that this is where it goes. And further, I can almost guarantee that parents will be targeted based upon their religious, their political, or other affiliations moving forward. And so I think the Crumleys are guilty of neglect and should have seen this coming and should have been held accountable in some way for the four murders committed by their son. But I don't know if the justice achieved in Michigan won't end up paling in comparison to the amount of injustice that will pile up as a result of this precedent.
Flip side of that is maybe it'll stop somebody else, some other parent from, you know, looking the other way. I don't know. It's a fucked up situation. I think wasn't there one point in the story where the mom had texted him or wrote him a note and said, "Just don't get caught next time. I'm not mad at you. Fuck her. She needs to go to jail." And I mean, I would have prosecuted him too as the prosecutor for negligence. You know.
No, I feel I the same way you do. I feel like they should be punished. Their inaction caused four deaths. Yeah. They could have stopped this. Yeah. But how do you take that and put it in a corner and make sure that 2 months from now, one of our kids does something on a much smaller level, nobody dies, somebody gets hurt, and all of a sudden we're hauled into court and being held responsible.
And, that's unfortunate. That's the, the legal system is not perfect, but it's the best in the world. And if that happens, then, they'll have to have their day in court. Hopefully it doesn't happen to anyone, but surely it is. And you're right. I'm sure they'll make an example out of this, but I don't know. Four kids are dead.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I want them punished. They should be punished. Yeah. I just don't want to see that impact a lot of other parents who
our country is founded off of basic rights and everything else. And hopefully, these things will be taken into consideration in the future. But if they're not, then I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball.
Well, it will be something to watch.
Yes, it will.
It's a really tough case. There's no doubt about it.
No winner in that, right?
No. And I can see both sides of that argument. Yep. It's just really, oof.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day, maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different. And in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple. And in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today. Well, we're going to go to Kansas. And we're going to go to Oklahoma about some Kansas women.
Oh, sorry, Dr. Chris. It's just the women that you need.
I brought you a story, or brought everybody a story, just Friday on two missing women who were dropping or picking up their children from a birthday party. And
we knew that wasn't going to be
nobody ever saw them again. Yeah.
Said it wouldn't go in well.
It didn't end well. And not only have they made 4 arrests, but they have also found the bodies of those women. And when I got into this story, I could not believe what I was reading. So two Kansas women who vanished as they tried to pick up children for a birthday party 2 weeks ago were killed over a custody dispute involving a group of anti-government Oklahomans calling themselves God's Misfits. Their vehicle was found March 30th along a rural Oklahoma highway with ample evidence of a bloody confrontation. And police were very tight to the vest on evidence. They just said it looked like a definitely something bad had taken place, but they weren't extremely specific on that. This set off a multi-agency effort to secure the children's safety while searching for the women and avoiding more violence. Veronica Butler, who was 27, and Jillian Kelly, who was 39, of Kansas, had arranged with the grandmother of Butler's two children to meet them at a highway intersection on the morning of March 30th and pick up the six-year-old and eight-year-old. This case did not end the way we had hoped. It's certainly been a tragedy for everyone involved. That from the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation Director Angela Spurlock, and that is Angela with a U. The four people arrested Saturday on charges of kidnapping and first-degree murder are the grandmother, Tiffany Adams, who is 54, her boyfriend, Tad Callum, who is 43, Courtney Twombly, who is 44, and her husband, Cole Twombly, who is 50. All meet regularly with several others in a group called God's Misfits. Butler's family found the vehicle just a few miles from the meetup spot after the women missed the party in Kansas. It was a gruesome scene. Blood was found on the roadway and the edge of the roadway. Butler's glasses were also found in the roadway south of the vehicle near a broken hammer. A pistol magazine was found inside Kelly's purse, but no pistol was found. Investigators gathered evidence that the killings were planned, with Adams buying prepaid burner phones to communicate and five stun guns at a nearby store. Her internet searches included asking about the pain levels of using the weapons. A teenage witness told authorities that Cora Twombly said at one point the plan was to throw an anvil through Butler's windshield while driving, making it look like an accident because anvils regularly fall off work vehicles.
They do.
I never heard of that in my life. I was going to say,
and don't they hit the ground immediately when they, since they weigh a ton?
Butler and Adams were in a problematic custody battle. Adams' son was in a rehab facility hours away in Oklahoma City, and Butler was allowed only supervised visits every Saturday. Kelly, the wife of a pastor, was Butler's court authorized choice to supervise visitations. The Oklahoma Court of Civil Appeals had directed a trial judge in 2022 to give the children's parents shared custody. The ruling described them as very young and immature parents who accused each other of inappropriate behavior and choices, but said the children are nurtured and comforted by the mother and happy and excited to be with father. Butler's request for more time with her children and unsupervised visitation was likely to be granted at a hearing in April. On March 23rd, with a court date looming, that's when Adams bought the stun guns. On March 29th, Cullum used heavy equipment to dig a hole in a pasture he rented, not far from the meetup site. Authorities did not say at the news conference where the bodies were found, but the affidavit said some of the burner phones stopped transmitting that morning in the vicinity of the pasture, where a hole had been dug and filled back in and then covered with hay. It wasn't entirely clear where the children were during the search. Adams told investigators that she had left them in the care of another couple on March 29th and 30th, and the affidavit said the couple regularly hosted the Misfits meetings. Authorities said the affidavits weren't unsealed until after the children's safety was assured. They were successful. No shots were fired, and the children were kept out of harm's way. The four people charged are being held without bond in the Texas County Jail pending court appearances. And, you know, it's really just a tragic, absolutely insane case where a grandmother had actually, you know, along with accomplices, killed
just
her daughter-in-law.
Wow. And then
you don't dig a hole. What appears to be an innocent person.
You don't dig a hole.
Well, both were innocent, but
and then fill it back in and cover it with hay unless there's bodies in it, right?
Right.
I'm trying to look up God's Misfits right
now.
Yeah,
I was just going
to
ask.
Because I want to see if there was like a...
When you see the lineup photos, if ever you were to, and you know, if ever you were to picture four people who look like they would be a part of a cult, these would be the four.
Yeah, but, two for sure. The two on the left.
Yeah.
I think, y'all, this is going to be more along the lines... of the, they don't call them one percenters. What do they call the anti-government groups that?
Well, they got the 3%ers,
I've dealt with some of these in the past. Yeah, the self-proclaimed anti-government group. And there's all kinds of different levels of that where you pull them over and they won't show you a driver's license, or they'll say, you know, hold up a sign. I don't have to roll down my window. I don't recognize your authority. They have fake license plates or what have you. But to kill these people, yeah.
Oh, sovereign citizens.
Sovereign citizens, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if that's a branch. I've never heard of it. That's just horrible.
I wonder what triggered it. Really, I mean, because the kids
child
were.
Child custody. Everybody said they were about to get to hearing where she was going to get supervised visitations and all that. And that's when she buys a stun gun. And then what do we tell you? Clear your search history. Like the effects of what these weapons will have on the victims. Oh, yeah, they're done.
Yeah.
At least the kids. And
I'm sure the bodies were found on that property.
Underneath that hay.
Yeah.
It's a crazy-ass story.
Crazy. I'm sure there's more to come on it. Yeah. So really tragic case. And, you know, with those two bodies that – I certainly, and what do you agree, are probably in that hole, or they pulled them out of that hole. Private autopsies available in Louisiana for those ladies. The
only place that you can get an independent autopsy done in the state of Louisiana is Parish Forensics, Roy and the Two Christens. And a shout out to that crew that do the autopsies when we were down there. They were like, in the room where they do the autopsies, they had a real life, real crime. What do you call that, mouse pad on the thing? And they were like, hey, we want to shout out because we joking, but shout out to them for doing the autopsies. But that this place is so professional, so well done. Y'all got to see your first DBs or dead bodies, and right?
Our first DBs?
That's what we call them in the business. DBs. But digging them out of the hole and figuring out if they got dirt in their lungs, were they still alive before they got in, or were they shot, whatever it may be. Personally, I don't ever want an autopsy done on me, but if I have to have one done, because I think it's the most invasive procedure in the world, but it's an evidence-finding mission. If I have to have one done, call Parish Forensics, let Roy and the Two Christens take care of
it. They got some sharp instruments in there. They could kick Quincy's ass. Remember Quincy?
Yes. But they are the bomb.com. Yep, remember the doctor, one of the doctors that we met, the pathologist in the back office. But anyway, that and super, super cool. Yeah, not only get to see the crematories and all that, but get to see the pet side.
Yeah,
that's right. Which, Jim, I know your family used recently when y'all lost a pet. And Mike, I know you're looking at getting a necklace made out of your recently lost pet, but they take care of it. And they just have so many innovative things. And y'all go to the website.
Go to lapetcrematory.com or lafuneralservices.com. But also, if I'm going to lose another dog sometime in the next year or two, and when I do, I'm going to take him out on the boat.
Yes, that'd be cool.
And get him some longitude and latitude.
Go visit him.
Go swim out to him every so often.
There you go. Love.
That's right.
American flag in Broussard,
Louisiana.
Rest easy.
Let me take you guys back in time a little bit.
All right. How far?
All the way back to 1993.
All right. I'm fresh for that.
Do you remember John Wayne Bobbitt?
I do. He got his dick cut off by the arena.
he got his willy chopped off.
I think she threw it out the window.
By Lorena. And she did.
In rocks and everything.
And she did throw it out the window. Well, believe it or not, he's been chopped again.
No. How's that even happen?
That's correct, folks. John Wayne Bobbitt, who famously had his penis chopped off by his then-wife, Lorena Bobbitt, in 1993, has been chopped again. The former Marine, age 57, revealed that he has been diagnosed with toxic peripheral polyneuropathy. The condition was caused by the toxic water conditions he was exposed to during his time at Camp Lejeune. You guys see all the ads about those, Camp Lejeune toxic?
These fucking emails every day. Like I'm from, I was never at Camp Lejeune, and they want me to see.
Well, let me tell you something. My my father, you know, got mesothelioma.
Oh, and I'm not saying
and
it's
it
not
was
legit.
Tied to his time at Lejeune.
I just think that they with everybody who was in the military service during that time and are blank.
Well, it's also a really broad period of time. It's like a 40-year period. If you were at Lejeune,
I was never a Marine.
Okay, well they didn't. It was Navy too, but I know you were. Yeah, okay, I know. The former Marine, 57, as I said, revealed he had the condition. The condition was caused by the toxic water conditions at Lejeune. Bobbitt is among the millions of Marines, sailors, civilian workers, and their families that were exposed to toxic water at Camp Lejeune between 1953 and 1987. So they had a 34-year period of this problem. Bobbitt's condition, peripheral polyneuropathy, involves damage to the peripheral nervous system, which sends signals between the central nervous system and other body parts. According to John, who now lives in Florida, it has caused him severe nerve damage and a bone infection that leads to ulcers and requires skin grafts. So this guy's been through a lot since his unit was chopped. As a result, he has had to have multiple operations in this latest procedure. Doctors were forced to amputate every single one of his toes.
Wow. So toes?
At least he kept his willy. Due to the nerve damage in his toes, he does not feel any sensation, making this chop far less painful than the one his first surgeon, Lorena, completed back in 93. Bobbitt told the British tabloid The Sun that he believes the mental and physical scars he suffered due to the contamination at Camp Lejeune contributed to the downfall of his relationship with his ex, Lorena. I wasn't behaving the way I should have, he told the outlet, adding, maybe I would have made better decisions if my cognitive functioning wasn't distorted by the chemicals. So he's blaming all that Amy Fisher crazy stuff on just Camp Lejeune.
Not just that, because in 1994, and I knew this because I remembered it, our good friend Ron Jeremy co-starred with John Wayne Bobbitt.
Yeah, we're getting to his acting career. Right. Way back in June of 93, Lorena used a kitchen knife to cut off John's penis while he slept. She then drove around with his organ before throwing it out of her car window. The severed unit was retrieved by police and reattached surgically. Lorena was tried for the attack but was ultimately acquitted by reason of temporary insanity. In 2016, John said on the docuseries Scandal Made Me Famous that he holds no ill will against Lorena, saying, we both hurt each other. I wish her the best. He also made several high-profile TV appearances and had a brief career as an adult film star afterwards with his repaired penis. So I guess it
worked
just fine.
The name of the movie was
afterward.
Uncut. I'm looking at it. Yeah. And it did have John Jeremy and, you know, several porn stars in it. Right. Tiffany Lords. Probably the only ones I ever heard of.
Well, I guess if you got to give up 10 digits, you'd give up your 10 toes and hang on to.
So you used an 8-inch kitchen knife.
God. Oh, that's, man.
In his sleep. I can't believe you didn't like
sharp.
Wake up you, instantly the
I
second.
I say that all the time. Why don't you just go to sleep? I'm going to cut your shit off.
You know, somebody should make a device you can sleep with that.
Get like a proximity alert or something if anything gets close to
you. Yeah, it's sort of like a chastity belt, but for the penis, you know, something that just, you know, so nobody can get at it with a knife.
Yeah.
Sure, I don't know. Work on that, Jim.
I'm a light sleeper. You're not getting close to my shit.
John Wayne Bobbitt. Wow. All right, we're going to go back to Louisiana.
All right.
And we're going to talk about a RICO. You don't usually hear about RICO trials in Louisiana.
Corruption organization, right? Some racketeering influence corp. Whatever it is, they came out.
Racketeer-influenced and corrupt organizations.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, they established that for our good friends and the Mike's people in New York City in the beginning.
They love it in Atlanta. Atlanta uses it more than – well, that's what
– yeah, they've been using that.
Trump and what's his name, the rapper, they both got them – they're both up on RICO charges.
Yep. Well, five people have been found guilty in one of Louisiana's first racketeer-influenced and corrupt organizations act trials, and they were all sentenced to life in prison. Daquan Johnson, 24, Tyler Bro, 21, Tyzante Davis, who is 24, and Nicholas Johnson, who is 22, and Marlon Jones III, who is 25, were all found guilty of second-degree murder for the shooting death of Eugene Gyro III. This occurred on January 21st of 2021. A trial was held on Friday, April 12th, at Point Capiz Courthouse. The family of the victim also provided an emotional statement. After a chaotic outburst at the reading of the verdict, the judge decided to hold a virtual sentencing. Two of the men, Daquan Johnson and Marlon Jones, chose to receive their sentencing in person. According to officials, Tyler Bro has a possibility of parole because he was 17 at the time of the incident. All five of the accused were found guilty around 6:30 p.m. in Point Capiz Parish, and officials say the victim was shot in his own home with three different guns on Pennsylvania Avenue in New Roads. The accused were involved in a gang called the Young and the Reckless.
Yep.
How you like that? That's original.
Yep.
When you're a gang, should you really steal your name from a soap opera? I don't
Reckless know. Instead of Restless. Right?
Yeah. Reckless.
So I got tons of history in this one, but go ahead and I'll tell you about it.
The sister of Jones actually overdosed on pills earlier that night that she had obtained from the victim and almost died. Johnson, a.k.a. Quarter Baby, is allegedly the leader of the gang and orchestrated the murder of Gyro. Evidence revealed Davis, a.k.a. Sweet Vontae, Bro, a.k.a. Fully Folo, and Nicholas Johnson, a.k.a. Nick.
Hey, nice.
How you like that? Yeah. Nicholas just said, just call me Nick. I don't need all this other stuff.
Nick. Dick.
And Marlon Jones, the third, a.k.a. Fume, went to the victim's house around 10:50 p.m. They were accused. Now they're convicted that they were armed with an AR and three different 9mm pistols when they arrived at the home. Johnson and Jones instructed someone to knock on the door, and when Gyro opened the door, the group shot him 21 times.
Yeah, I knew it was a lot.
Young folks want to be involved in gangs. Guide yourself accordingly. The buck stops here. We're no longer playing with you, and we're no longer dealing with you. We will start trying you with this RICO statute and trying your gang. This from District Attorney Tony Clayton. Clayton said he's trying to make an example of the five convicted.
All right, let's talk about a couple things real quick. First of all, this is it. It was Point Capiz Parish, but it's actually in the town of New Roads, which is very, very small on Foss River. I grew up there on the summers. My grandfather had the first little camp on the town side right across on Main Street, right across. It's no longer there. They tore it down or whatever. I also was in the National Guard there, 769th Engineer Battalion. I have a lot of good friends from there, but it's a small community. I mean, it's like probably like the size of the town of Livingston.
Yeah.
The lake's like 12 miles long. So Oxbow, where the Mississippi River cut off over time, very affluent for 80% of the town. And then some that are not so affluent, obviously. But this is an example of gangs coming to small town America, right?
Yes.
And running the streets. So this is not New York City or Baton Rouge. This is in the middle of asshole nowhere. But shout out to Tony Clayton, who and I disagreed on some things in the past, but we had phone conversations, and I actually reached out to the lifers, told them to lay off of him on a specific case. Tony Clayton having the balls to bring up Rico in New Roads, Louisiana.
Crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, I don't even think it has like one stoplight.
Yeah.
And it, so he's bringing it home. But
Tony, it don't speed.
Tony Clayton doesn't fucking play. And so shout out for him for getting it done. Fuck those punks. They're going to enjoy Angola for the rest of their life.
Are you saying these guys weren't locals?
Oh, yeah, they're locals.
Oh, they were locals.
And what I'm saying, okay. What I'm saying is that, that where this happened, that is, that's probably not.
It's
5,000
blinking, you miss it.
I mean, it's like nothing. The only thing that's there, besides one of the best meat places for cracklings and boudin in the state of Louisiana, is Hospital Road and the road that follows the river. Yeah. Not the river, the it's called False River. And the river on one side, and actually the victim's name was Gyro, the town of Gyro, which is on the other side, and there's not even a stop sign there.
Yeah.
But I was raised there. And but it's small town, I mean, during the summers. Small town, Tony Clayton stepping up, bringing the juice to punk-ass wannabes. I mean, come on, bro. Come up with a better name. Yeah. And that's it.
Nick.
Yeah. You remember that?
Well,
I'm going party? With Nick.
You remember a bachelor party with Tom Hanks when the male stripper comes in and it's Nick and they call him Nick the Dick. And they say, why you call him Nick the Dick? And he unzipped it and went, boom, you heard it hit the floor. And Hanks says, damn, I thought the opening of the World Trade Center was something impressive. But anyway, shout out Tony Clayton. Good job, brother.
The funniest thing about that movie, I watched it fairly recently, is to see Tom Hanks in that role because of everything else he did the rest of his career. It was that, and Bosom Buddies was the sitcom that he did. I wonder how that guy Fume got his nickname. What do you think?
Oh,
big farter?
They'd probably say.
Probably a big farter. I love this story. You guys are going to love this story. Right. I've got a new hero, and I believe you guys will too when I'm done sharing this story. Her name is Christine Jennian, and she's an 85-year-old Idaho woman who takes care of her disabled son named David. She's a hero already just for that, but listen to what happened back at Christine's house on March 13th. Jennian had been asleep in her home when she was woken up by a man who was dressed in a military jacket and a black ski mask and pointing a gun at her head. Her disabled son David was also in the home at the time. Authorities believe the intruder struck Christine in the head while she was asleep in bed and then took her, dragged her, to the living room of the house and handcuffed her to a wooden chair in the living room.
Yeah.
According to police, the man in the mask then asked Christine where her valuables were, and she told him that there were two safes downstairs and allowed him to access the safes. While the masked man was downstairs, authorities said Christine drugged the chair that she was handcuffed into all the way to her bedroom and retrieved the .357 Magnum revolver that she hid under her pillow. She then dragged herself back into the living room and hid the gun between the armrest and a cushion of the couch near where she was seated. When the man returned, she ultimately made the decision that it was, quote, now or never, and drew her gun, shooting the intruder twice. The prosecutor's office said the man, who was later identified as 39-year-old Derek Condon, returned fire with his 9mm pistol, and he hit Christine multiple times in several parts of her body. Authorities said that Condon then went into the adjoining kitchen and eventually died from his wounds, while Christine fell to the floor still handcuffed. She was eventually able to call 911 nearly 10 hours later when her son David gave her a phone. Deputies provided life-saving measures to her at the home at approximately 12:17 p.m., and the prosecuting attorney's office said that evidence found in Christine's home backed up her story, including a broken window in the rear of the home and a screwdriver found next to the door where Condon had entered. Condon's car was also found near the woman's own car with a trail of footprints leading from it. Ryan Jolly, the Bingham County prosecuting attorney, said the case is an example of self-defense and justifiable homicide under Idaho laws. It also presents one of the most heroic acts of self-preservation I've ever heard of, said Jolly. That Christine survived the encounter is truly incredible. He added, her grit, determination, and will to live appear to be what saved her that night. Woody, I would like to officially nominate Christine Jenian to the All Woody team.
Absolutely. American badass.
80-something. What is 85, she? 357
Magnum. You know, the only great thing about a 357 Magnum is
what?
That when you want to target practice with it, you can actually use 38 rounds. So they're much cheaper than 357 rounds. But have you ever shot a 357? That's a cannon.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about, like, will break your arms. And
85-year-old grandma.
A little bit of recoil with that sucker.
357 Magnum. Shout out to her.
And she dragged herself handcuffed to a chair.
And got back in there.
To a bedroom to get it while she sent him downstairs.
You gotta love that.
Fucking A.
Yeah, that's badass.
You go, Christine. You are all Woody.
Oh.
Ooh, hump day.
Ooh, hump day. Hump day, hump day. Kinky crimes. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Missouri. I like Missouri. I like to drive to Missouri. They got legal weed stores, and it's legal to distill alcohol in Missouri. It's beautiful country. Big birds and big deer and shit.
Big birds?
Big turkeys. But I actually have one in my bar that is stuffed from Missouri. But this guy, he could pretty much be a dumb criminal too. But a Missouri man is facing a felony theft charge for swiping 8 luxury vibrators from an adult toy store. Like, and then trying to fence them via the Facebook marketplace.
There you go.
Right? So Chris.
Find anything on there.
But it gets better, right? Christopher Michael Booth, 34, was named yesterday in a felony complaint, charging him with stealing the vibrators valued at a combined $1,539.20. Yep.
For 8?
Yep. From a Hollywood Hustler. Now, Hustler Hollywood outlet in Berkeley, St. Louis suburb.
That's basically $200 a piece.
That's right. So the sex toys, which retail for around $200 a piece, or manufactured by Lelo, a Swedish company that advertises itself as one of the world's leading designer brands for intimate lifestyle products. Now, Booth last month took the vibrators from a display, placed them in a white trash bag, and raced out of the store. But employees told police they recognized him because he had been seen in the store a day earlier and had argued with them before being asked to leave. The man, the workers, this is where it gets good, and he could be a dumb criminal. The man, the workers also recall, had the numbers 314 prominently tattooed on his neck. 314 is the main St. Louis area code. Y'all look at this. Look at this picture.
Wow.
Genius.
So the items consistent with those stolen from the store were later offered for sale on Facebook Marketplace under the defendant's Facebook profile. And... yeah, he's been a regular asshole.
That's his convictions. Who the hell is 314?
You can't even see it. His neck has 314.
Usually people that do something like that with the area code or whatever do a very subtle, you know, it's like on a finger or whatever. It's these letters go from like from his below his Adam's apple.
Right.
All the way up to his ears, to his chin. Almost,
yeah.
314.
And then he's in there arguing with him. He comes back in to steal.
But I mean, who the hell is buying sex toys off of Facebook Marketplace?
Ooh, that's a good question. Jesus. That's a good question.
I mean,
evidently someone was. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
probably
is that a bad place to shop for him?
It might be used.
I would probably buy it from more reputable person than just another person.
Yeah.
God.
There you go.
Ooh.
Got a little Super Cops.
Wow.
Super Cops.
A little Super Cops. We had a big deal happen in Australia last week, and a Super Cop came to the rescue. We're going to tell you about her. A female police officer is becoming a hero after acting alone to neutralize a suspect who went on a stabbing spree at a shopping center near Sydney, Australia. She has been identified as Amy Scott. 6 people are dead and 8 more injured, including a 9-month-old infant, after a 40-year-old man wielding a knife went on a rampage Saturday afternoon. She has been identified as Amy Scott. 6 people are dead and 8 more injured, including a 9-month-old infant, after a 40-year-old man man wielding a knife went on a rampage Saturday afternoon in the shopping mall. Authorities say the police officer who was first to respond on the scene ran towards the assailant and fatally shot him, ending his killing spree. She showed enormous courage and bravery, that from the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Karen Webb. A witness described the officer's fearless action. She said as the officer approached the suspect, the man refused to drop his knife. All she said was, "Put it down," just once. Then she shot him in the chest and he went down. He added that the man gave the officer no choice. She had to shoot him because he just kept coming. He had a knife and he wasn't going to stop. He was advancing towards her and he was running, coming to get someone else. Dixon said the officer shot the suspect once in the chest. We want to shout her out, Miss Amy Scott, as she is our hero.
21-foot rule. Most people don't know it. If you have a knife and you get inside 21 feet of an officer, they have the right to use deadly force. And also, most people don't know this. If you're running at me, I can't run backwards as fast as you can run forwards.
Right.
So they teach you to step to the side and shoot. And
Well, so, and the guy lunged at her when she shot him. I paid close attention to this story because it broke over the weekend, and there was a second group of stabbings in a church in Sydney over the same time. But one of the victims was a 9-month-old kid here who is still in the hospital and is going to recover, but unfortunately, when that 9-month-old recovers, they're going to recover to find out that their mother lost her life in the attack. And so, you know, people talk all the time about, they don't have guns over there. Well, no, they don't. But we're seeing an awful lot of knife,
We have some huge lifers over there that have sent me pictures of their firearms over the years, but man, they got to go through a shit ton of permits to get them.
Yeah.
And, but you're right. I mean, if somebody wants to kill somebody, they can take a baseball bat or a rifle or a knife, whatever.
Yeah. And you may wonder, in these situations, you got those three F's, fight, flight, or freeze. And what would you do? And you don't really know till you're in the situation. And most people freeze.
I'm definitely going to fight.
Yeah, the mom that lost her life was a 38-year-old named Ashley Good, and it was her 9-month-old.
Prayers for all of them. Yeah, shout out for the super cop for stopping more, because you're not going to stop. In a situation like that, you're doing it, you're not going to stop until somebody puts you down.
Well, shout out Amy Scott.
Yeah,
10-4. Way to go, Amy. Bravery. 10-4.
A little different twist today on dumb criminals, where I'm going to tell you about the dumbest criminal of all time.
All right.
And my guess is you're going to figure this out pretty quick, but we're going to tell you the story of this dumbass. This is an official real-life real crime daily designation until such time as a criminal dumber than this individual emerges, which we doubt will ever happen. Today's historic dumbass was born on July 9th, 1947 in San Francisco. He'd come from the rough Potrero Hill Projects in San Francisco. But his maternal grandparents were actually from Louisiana.
Really?
A fact most people don't know. In fact, his aunt from Louisiana was credited with giving him his rare first name, which she said came from a French actor she was very fond of. In his early teenage years, he joined a street gang called the Persian Warriors. He was incarcerated 3 different times during his teen years, spending plenty of quality time at the San Francisco Youth Guidance Center. Folklore has it that one day he met the great Willie Mays at a San Francisco youth sports program. Mays saw something in the kid and asked around about him. After learning of the kid's troubled reputation, Mays confronted him, telling him he had the talent to accomplish much in life, but he'd have to fight off his demons if he was ever to succeed. In 1967, our dummy enrolled at the University of Southern California on a football scholarship. In 1968, he won the Heisman Trophy, scoring 22 touchdowns and running for over 1,700 yards. It was off to the NFL next, where he was the first player chosen in the draft by the Buffalo Bills. He'd end up playing in 6 Pro Bowls, retiring as the number 2 all-time rusher in the NFL, the only player ever to gain 2,000 yards in a 14-game season, and was a unanimous selection into the NFL Hall of Fame in 1985. No sooner had his NFL career sunset when the sun rose again for him in a highly successful acting and sportscasting career. He was one of the most recognized and liked personalities on the planet as he entered the 1990s. He had it all. The Naked Gun movies, the Monday Night Football broadcasts, the Hertz car rental ads. The money was flowing, as they say. He settled in L.A.'s West Side neighborhood of Brentwood. He was a member of L.A.'s prestigious Riviera Country Club. He hobnobbed with the rich and famous. Juice, as his buddies referred to him, had risen from the projects of San Francisco to the pinnacle of the sports world and then blossomed in Hollywood like no ex-athlete before him. He became literally the first major black pitch man in marketing. But as Willie Mays allegedly told him when he was about 16 years old, he'd need to continue to fight off his demons to continue his wonderful life. His public persona masked the anger and jealousy that boiled underneath. His volatile relationship with his beautiful wife turned to rage and domestic violence incidents. By the end of 1989, police had made 8 domestic violence visits to the couple's home. On December 31st of 1989, his wife phoned the police saying that she thought he was going to kill her. She was found by officers hiding in the bushes outside of the home, badly beaten and half naked. Authorities said that he had punched, slapped, and kicked her. A family friend claimed that he had told her friends that if he ever, quote, caught her with anyone, he would kill her. The couple divorced on February 25th of 1992, but made numerous attempts at reconciliation afterward. They broke up again for the final time in May of 1994. Just 1 month later, on June 12th of 1994, she was found brutally murdered. The demons Willie Mays spoke of had surfaced, and there would be no looking back. We all know the story from there. The irony of a black man who lived almost exclusively in the company of white friends getting acquitted of murders he obviously committed as payback for Rodney King's beating at the hands of the LA police. His time had finally come. Orenthal James O.J. Simpson is dead, and justice has finally been served. The day after, friends of his put the white Bronco up for sale. For $1.5 million, it can be yours. Can you believe the nerve? Selling the white Bronco, yeah. The very next day.
For $1.5 million. Fires of hell burn a little bit brighter that day.
We had just talked about it when we were together recording last time, and then literally when I got home that day, the news came out that that he was dead.
Are you done?
Am I done? Yeah.
The travesty of justice, like I've never seen. I remember I was living in Chattanooga, Tennessee, when the trial actually came down. I read all the books, all the stuff. We didn't have the internet back then. I remember working in the pipe cage at DuPont and going on my break when the jury came back. They found him not guilty. It's just fucking horrible. The way they handled the case, the way they fucked it up from the get-go.
A weird other attachment to the case, because John Ziegler, who I do the Death of Journalism podcast with, was a host on KFI in Los Angeles, a big AM talk station. And he gets approached one day about OJ signing memorabilia at a sports memorabilia shop in Burbank, and decides he can't let it happen. And he takes a mobile broadcast unit, goes there, and blocks the whole thing from happening.
Yeah, good for him.
And then he becomes involved with these two guys who the entire thing turns into the Las Vegas memorabilia case where OJ really doesn't realize who he's dealing with in this in that situation, which were the same guys that were trying to put on the show in Los Angeles for him. And he was trying to do what he was trying to do because he was trying to do it under the table so he wouldn't have to pay the Goldmans any of the money. Anyway, we have a fantastic rundown of that in the latest The Death of Journalism. But it's the case was such a travesty. But it was payback. I mean, they interviewed so many of those jurors that said, you know, 90% of the jury was about payback for Rodney King, not about OJ, because OJ was hardly at that point a prominent figure in the black community. He had really embedded himself in the white community, if you will. So it's ironic.
Well, he still had Al Cowlings and Tony Dorsett, and you know, he was friends with a lot of black people too.
He had Al Cowlings, but if you look at who he was hanging around at Riviera with, it wasn't those guys.
Go listen to The Death of Journalism, and I'm sure it's covered frontwards and backwards, right? Anywhere you can find a podcast, go listen to Death of Journalism and get you 3 hours of Orenthal Simpson.
Any final thoughts?
Nope. Love and appreciate each and every one of y'all for real.
Well, if you had a long weekend between the Masters and mourning for OJ and
tilling your garden
and hanging
out with your dad,
Iran attacking Israel, it'd be a good time to get in touch with our buddy Tracy Lofton. Get yourself all rinsed out there. I recommend that Myers cocktail, but she's got lots of them, and you can get her at TLMLofton, LOFTON, at yahoo.com, or go to Lanyap Infusions on Facebook.
Shout out Tracy.
See our superstar nurse, Tracy.
All right, until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton.
And I'm Mike Agavino.
Your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.
Aguets.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.